WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, sitting in for Terry Gross. Science writer Richard Preston has been covering infectious diseases and emerging viruses for nearly a decade. His 1992 book, The Hot Zone, told the story of the Ebola virus, a highly contagious and in most cases lethal illness which causes massive hemorrhaging in its victims. Preston is also the author of a new novel called The Cobra Event about biological terrorism. It's speculated that Iraq, Russia, and many other nations around the world are researching and developing viral and bacterial strains, including Ebola, as weapons of mass destruction. Richard Preston has a new article in this week's New Yorker magazine on biological weapons and the scientists who are researching them. In the piece, he profiles Ken Alibek, an anthrax specialist who defected from the Russian biological weapons program in 1992. Alibek claims that under his tenure, the Russians were developing smallpox, Marburg virus, and anthrax for use in offensive weaponry, despite an international ban on their production. These bioweapons come under the heading of germ warfare, which includes chemical weapons. I asked Richard Preston how biological and chemical weapons differ.
There is a profound difference, a world of difference, between chemical weapons and biological weapons. Chemical weapons are poison gases. They act locally, and generally they touch your skin and they cause instantaneous death. Biological weapons are germs, they're organisms, and they're alive. They may be specially engineered for purposes of warfare and terrorism. They can spread in an infectious process. So that a biological weapon can be a strategic weapon. That is to say, it can have a terrible impact on a large human population very suddenly. There are only two kinds of strategic weapons in the world. One is nuclear weapons and the other is biological weapons. The difference is that biological weapons are alive and know how to replicate in the human body. A nuclear bomb is not alive and doesn't know how to make copies of itself.
Does that mean that bioweapons are much more effective than nuclear weapons?
In certain significant respects, a contagious biological weapon may be more powerful than the hydrogen bomb because it can spread, may also be more uncontrollable. However, it should be pointed out that many biological weapons are in fact not contagious, such as anthrax. You can't catch anthrax from a person who's infected with it. This means that they act in very controllable ways. You can do a release of a biological weapon on a human population and you know it isn't going to spread. You know it's merely going to kill the people who have breathed it.
What effect does anthrax have on the body?
Anthrax is interesting. Anthrax is a bacterium, of course, that forms spores. They can drift for many miles in the air. If they lodge in the human lung, they cause something that resembles a kind of flu or the common cold. Now, you can imagine, for example, a terrorist attack in a city using anthrax. For 3 days, people who had been in the plume of anthrax particles and had become infected would be walking around thinking they had the common cold. People would be saying to one another, there's something new going around town, around New York, Washington, or wherever. On about day 3, you suddenly die of anthrax pneumonia. The death is precipitate, and it's an absolute crash. Doctors in the Soviet Union who observed patients dying of anthrax during an accident in 1979 reported that they would be talking to a patient at bedside, and the patient would be explaining how he felt, and he would die in mid-sentence. He would die between breaths. The anthrax spores produce a toxin as they multiply, a toxin which actually causes a breathing arrest.
There's a vaccine for anthrax, but is there a cure for anthrax?
The vaccine is, in fact, a cure. You can get the vaccine after you've been exposed to anthrax, and it will save your life in the same way that the rabies vaccine will save you after you've been bitten by a dog, a mad dog. The downside here is that if a major release of anthrax were to occur in an American city, say, it's quite conceivable that 50,000 or more people would be exposed to the plume of anthrax particles. It would be necessary to fly in overnight maybe 3 tons of antibiotics or a similar amount of vaccines just to get them into about 50,000 people. If people were aware that they had been exposed to a biological weapon, there would be a terrible public outcry for medicines immediately to help calm the population and save lives. At the present time, the federal government is totally unprepared to do this. There isn't any stockpile of 3 tons of antibiotics anywhere in the United States, and there isn't any system to get vaccines or antibiotics into an American population.
Is there any protection from them? Say, are you safer if you're inside or if you're doing the old duck and cover routine?
No, you're not safer indoors. The United States conducted huge strategic tests of real live biological weapons in the Pacific Ocean during the 1960s. These tests went on from 1964 to 69, and they involved huge elements of the U.S. Navy. The number of ships was equivalent to about a fifth of the U.S. Navy. These ships, the tests were as extensive as any hydrogen bomb tests in the Pacific. One of the things they found out was that when they released these things into the air, they tested them on monkeys that were in barges stationed downwind from the releases. And monkeys that were in rooms below decks, closed off from the outside air, died at the same rate as monkeys that were outdoors. The particles can simply seep through cracks and drift into a room.
My guest is Richard Preston. He's the author of a number of books on science, including First Light and the Hot Zone on the Ebola virus. He's also the author of a novel about biological terrorism called The Cobra Event. He's written an article about bioweapons, the bioweapons industry in the Soviet states and here in the U.S. for the New Yorker magazine that's currently on newsstands. Now, we know about the Soviet biological weapons program has mainly come from two sources, two scientists who defected in the last decade from Russia. You've talked extensively to one of them, Ken Alibek. What was his job in the Soviet bioweapons organization?
Dr. Ken Alibek was the chief scientist in the Soviet biological weapons program. He was a scientific administrator and a researcher who worked out of the offices of Biopreparat in Moscow. Biopreparat then was the umbrella organization for this huge, sprawling biowarfare program.
I'd like you to tell us more about these infectious biological weapons, starting with smallpox. You write that in the early 90s, the Soviet bioweapons program engineered a new smallpox. Tell us about it.
Yes, Ken Alibek has made the claim, and it is supported by some evidence, that in the early 1990s, just before the Soviet Union broke up, researchers at a place called Vector, which is a huge laboratory in Siberia that was primarily dedicated to the development and production of virus weapons, did genetic engineering on the smallpox virus. Now, smallpox virus, it turns out, may be quite amenable to genetic engineering. It's rather easy to open up the genome or the DNA of smallpox and put other things in there, other types of viruses, for example. The claim is that they developed a brain virus out of smallpox. They added something called VEE, or Venezuelan equine encephalitis, which causes a sudden massive infection of the human central nervous system. The idea is by putting this into smallpox, you would have, in effect, a brain pox, a type of smallpox that races through the human brain. Whether they actually did this and whether they tested this is a matter of debate. But I think the bottom line is that genetic engineering is rather easy to do. And there's plenty of circumstantial but troubling evidence that a number of countries worldwide now are using genetic engineering to create new viruses for the purposes of weapons.
You write that it's possible that the smallpox has left Russia for destinations all over the world. Who's carrying it, and are they carrying it in an easily engineerable form that would be effective?
The Russian biological weapons program has hit hard times, and many scientists, no one knows the number, appear to have gone abroad to other countries. The world may be entering a kind of quiet biological arms race, and the Soviets had the most advanced and successful bioweapons program on Earth. They may well have sent people, I should say that people may have just simply left Russia and gone to foreign countries, maybe carrying strains with them.
Our guest is Richard Preston. He's the author of a number of books about industry and science, including The Hot Zone on the Ebola virus and a novel about biological terrorism called The Cobra Event. Richard Preston is also a contributor to The New Yorker. He has an article in the current edition of the magazine about biological weapons and the history of the bioweapons industry in the Soviet states and also in the United States. We'll be back after this break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with science writer and novelist Richard Preston. He has a piece in The New Yorker magazine on the newsstands now about biological weapons, what they are, how they're produced, and who's working on them. Ken Alabeck also told you about a number of different weapons that the Soviet scientists were developing during his tenure in the program. One of them was Marburg virus. First of all, what is that? Where does it come from?
Marburg virus. Marburg virus is a close cousin of the Ebola virus. It first came to the attention of the world in 1967 in Marburg, Germany. It causes a kind of biological meltdown of a human being the same way that Ebola does, and it looks like Ebola under a microscope. One of the standard reference strains of the Marburg virus is known as the Pop strain, and it came from the body of a monkey worker in Germany in 1967 named Heinrich Pop. He survived, apparently. The Soviets obtained the strain, and in 1988, they were working on it with the idea that they could create a strategic biological weapon out of it for loading into their intercontinental ballistic missiles targeted on the United States. A researcher at the Vector Laboratory in Siberia by the name of Dr. Nikolai Ustinov was working with Marburg in a level 4 lab, and he pricked his finger with a needle. This got Marburg into his bloodstream. And over the course of about 14 days, he proceeded to die an incredibly gruesome death of the Marburg virus. He was a scientist, Dr. Ustinov, and he kept a scientific journal or a diary. And in the end, his journal is smeared with blood. He apparently sweated blood directly from the pores of his skin during the final hemorrhagic phase as he died. Afterwards, on April 30th, 1988, there was an autopsy conducted in the Level 4 hospital. The researchers at Vector removed Dr. Ustinov's liver and spleen and a quantity of his blood. They used this as the reference material for a strain of virus of Marburg, which they then called Variant U. Variant U, after Ustinov. Variant U was extensively tested, and by about 1990, they had developed a manufacturing process to make it in fairly large quantities, kilogram quantities, of pure powdered Variant U Marburg virus, which had particles that were extremely fine, like bath talc. They were treated with certain special materials, and they were what is known as a strategic operational biological weapon, ready for loading into warheads. It was right at that time that the Soviet Union fell apart. I speculate and wonder whether the Variant U strain of Marburg, which began with a humble monkey worker in Germany named Pop, has now gone abroad to other countries around the world and may be a focus of military development of biological weapons. For all anybody knows, Variant U of Marburg may be one of the most dangerous and disturbing biological weapons that exist today.
In the late 60s and early 70s, a number of nations, including the U.S., Great Britain, and the Soviet Union, all agreed to ban the development and the stockpiling and the use of biological weapons. Now, you write that the fallout, at least for the United States, in shutting down its bioweapons program is that scientists here don't really know how these biological weapons work, and in fact, don't think that they're effective. What do scientists, or the scientists that you talk to here in the U.S., base their distrust of bioweapons on?
That's really interesting. One of the unexpected results of the ending of the American Biological Weapons Program was a virtually total loss of technical knowledge of biological weapons. And a generation of experts in biological weapons came along, scientists, who firmly believed that Russia was not violating the Biological Weapons Treaty. They insisted on this passionately. They were absolutely wrong. It's now known in the science community how wrong they were. But in the meantime, there was a sense of confidence about the treaty, confidence that the treaty was working. confidence that in any case, biological weapons, it was believed, had never been thoroughly tested, had never been demonstrated to work, and in fact might not be usable as weapons. They would either be simply ineffective, they wouldn't kill people, or they would have this tendency to go so wildly out of control that they would blow back and destroy anybody who used them. While these beliefs, and they were only beliefs, not based on fact, were circulating in the American scientific community, a generation of talented and skilled researchers in the Soviet Union was moving forward rapidly with a highly successful biological weapons program.
And what is the fallout for that? I mean, what are the dangers of us not really understanding how these weapons work in a very practical, hands-on manner?
Well, you know, I think it's translated into a belief, a widespread belief in the American government, which, by the way, is now changing rapidly, that biological weapons are not really a problem. They're not a problem in diplomacy, really. They're not really a threat to national security, not really. They're not anything that has to be put on the front burner and dealt with intellectually or technically.
The U.S. military is currently moving up on its anthrax vaccination program. I mean, they're taking this threat, at least of anthrax, pretty seriously. Now, some of the biological weapons that you're describing make anthrax sound like nothing. Are we on the wrong track, and are we on the wrong track because of this misunderstanding of how these weapons work and what their effectiveness is?
No, we're not on the wrong track. We're getting onto the right track. The fact of the matter is, though, sure, there are a lot of absolutely terrible biological weapons out there. There's a wide variety of them, apparently, and some of them, the genetically engineered types, we may not even know about or know how to deal with. But, you know, you fight diseases one step at a time, natural diseases. When measles is going around, you vaccinate for measles. When smallpox was going around in its natural form, we fought it. Each one of these weapons or diseases has to be dealt with as an entity or an individual, as an organism. And it makes a big difference to go ahead and try to prepare for anthrax, to try to prepare for smallpox. If you do that, you've denied a potential enemy the use of these kinds of weapons, either on American troops or even on the American population as a whole. Just to give you an example about that, if the United States is vaccinating its armed forces for anthrax, that means that there will be a factory available for making large amounts of anthrax vaccine. The vaccine will be stockpiled somewhere in the United States, and it will also be usable on a civilian population in an emergency. This is a good idea to do this kind of thing.
Is the United States currently researching or creating bioweapons?
Not to my knowledge, and it's a great question. I think there are actually two answers to that question. First of all, I've seen no evidence of it. And in fact, I go around and I find that the people who are the most knowledgeable about biological weapons are these old people who are retired now, veterans of the old American program. There is a stark lack of knowledge of these weapons among people who are in government now. That would indicate that we don't have a program. And in addition, I just haven't seen the evidence. The second part of the answer is that what's scary to me is that the United States could have a program overnight if there was a decision to do it. We have the most advanced biotechnology industry in the world. I think that what keeps us from doing this is, in fact, the American people. The public has to kind of keep up a vigilance about this. And I think that in the United States, secrets don't stay secrets for very long. If we had a program or one was beginning to develop, it would be revealed quickly enough. And then it would be, I feel, the responsibility or the duty of the American people to put a stop to it.
Well, given what you know about the Soviet bioweapons program, and also what the research that you've done into the Iraqi situation, what can you say with any certainty is the Iraqi arsenal?
I think this is a very big question, and I think clearly the UN was kicked out of Iraq because they were finding out what the arsenal is in Iraq. Whether the Iraqis are really good at using their biological weapons, how much do they really know about biological weapons, isn't at all clear. But I think we can speculate that the Iraqi arsenal would include anthrax, which may well be genetically engineered for antibiotic resistance, smallpox, perhaps, Camel pox, yes, which is a close relative of smallpox. Black plague, maybe. Botulism or botulinum toxin, definitely. The Iraqis said they had it. And there may be other agents, infectious organisms, in the Iraqi arsenal.
Richard Preston, I want to thank you very much for talking with me today on Fresh Air.
Nice to be with you, Barbara.
Richard Preston's article on biological weapons is featured in this week's New Yorker magazine. His new novel about biological terrorism is The Cobra Event. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.